This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hey out there, thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are trial lawyers and we practice in the areas of nursing home abuse and neglect in the state of Georgia. We're coming to you from our offices in Atlanta, Georgia, specifically our office library, aka The Dungeon. A lot of good things to talk about today. I've learned not to ask Will how he's doing because he is a zero at improv. And he couldn't answer like a normal person. So we're going to skip the pleasantries. I'll tell you that I'm doing fine on this Monday morning or whenever you happen to be listening to it. I hope that I'm doing fine at that point. Lots of interesting topics today for the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Again, if you're a new listener, this is a video podcast, meaning that you can either watch or listen. If you have chosen to listen as your means of consuming this episode, you can do so either going to iTunes or to Stitcher. And if you do that, be sure to subscribe to us, give us an awesome review. Or you can watch us, look at our pretty faces on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Or you can go to our YouTube channel. Like I said, lots of good things today. Lots of good things. Like, who is that? Martha Stewart? Who is good things? Is that Martha Stewart?
I along with everyone else watching or listening, have no idea what you're talking about.
No, it isn't. I feel like Martha Stewart is known for saying, like, these are good things. Like, it's a good thing. Right? Did I make that up? Or is that Oprah?
So. I think so.
Some powerful woman with a lot of money and an entertainment group behind them says something along the lines of it's a good thing. Pretty sure.
All right.
If not, it starts on this episode.
Right. You heard it here first.
So at the end of 2016, there were some technological innovations in the detection and care and treatment of a particular type of injury that is common and unfortunate
and devastating
in long-term care facilities.
Yeah.
And that injury is the pressure ulcer, more commonly known as the bed sore.
And also called a decubitus ulcer.
And what is a decubitus ulcer or a bed sore?
Essentially, it's a breakdown of the skin on a bedridden patient where the pressure of either the bone or the body is causing friction or pressure against the mattress.
And what eventually ends up happening, unfortunately, is that the pressure or the friction or the shear to the body ends up depriving the tissue and the muscle underneath the skin from getting blood. And without blood, the tissue and muscle decays.
And this is a very, like, horrible thing to witness. I mean, we actually interviewed the family of a individual yesterday, and the son-in-law was telling us that he was under the impression that a bed sore was like a little rash or a little red spot, and he was absolutely astonished to find the stage 4 bed sore on his mother-in-law went all the way to the bone. I mean, this is not, a bed sore is probably almost too innocuous of a word. It is a wound. It is, in many cases, a wound that can go, it can start off as a red spot, and then it ends up going all the way to the bone.
That's right. So, as you mentioned, stage 4 in the case of our client, generally a bed sore is going to be categorized or indexed according to various stages, and those stages are 1 through 4, and then if it's difficult to observe and figure out, or if it's just so bad, it will be unstageable. But the stages go from 1 to 4, 1 being the least harmful, to 4 being maximum harmful. And depending on the level of depth and width and the size of the wound. So stage one would be sometimes it's just a blemish or sometimes it's just a red mark, to stage four, which can be, you know, this, you can put two of your fists inside someone's body and see bone.
And they become necrotic and, you know, becomes septic, and it can be fatal. You know, a stage one bed sore is not that uncommon. And what should happen is when the nursing home discovers, hey, look, there appears to be the beginning of a skin breakdown, they start making sure that they're turning the resident, they're repositioning the resident even
That's
more.
Right.
If it gets to stage two, you may get wound care involved. But then if it gets to stage three and then ultimately stage four, you've got some serious neglect going on. As a matter of fact, CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, considers pressure ulcers, bed sores, to be avoidable. And they can be. Again, you know, what should happen is that the nursing home notices a one or maybe a two, that they should pull out all the stops and make sure it doesn't progress.
That's right. So CMS, Medicare, and Medicaid services will view bed sores as an injury that can either be avoidable or unavoidable. And based on the criteria of each individual resident, most of the time they are avoidable. Now, how do you know whether or not your loved one is, if they have a bed sore or not, it was avoidable or unavoidable? Well, it's going to depend on a few factors, but if a facility that your loved one in is receiving Medicare, Medicaid services, and they're obligated to do certain things, which would determine whether or not it's avoidable or unavoidable.
Right. And it's important that, you know, you check your loved one out. You know, when you go there, you know, it's an absolutely good idea for you to look over their body, to check them out, ask them how they're feeling, to ask the staff if you noticed any sores. Be very proactive. I think that's important. In the case that we had yesterday, the family didn't even know that she had a stage four bed sore until she went to a different facility. And that's absolutely unforgivable.
There are different criteria to determine whether or not something is avoidable or unavoidable. And in the context of how Medicare categorizes these wounds. So if a long-term care facility receives funding, then they are obligated to do certain things. And the first thing that they're obligated to do is to assess each individual resident for their particular risk to getting a bed sore. So, for example, if an individual resident is bedridden or mm-hmm. is immobile, they are at higher risk. If they are unable to move themselves or reposition themselves, they're mm-hmm. at a higher risk. If they're incontinent, they have a higher risk. Mm-hmm. So there are various risk factors that should be assessed once the resident is placed in the long-term care facility. And based on the level of risk, then certain interventions should be made by the long-term care facility. So, for example, making sure that a resident is turned on at a certain interval. Oftentimes, when a bed sore has gotten to be bad, in higher stages, it's once every 2 hours, or even actually, it could be more often than that.
It's typically what you see is patients who are non-ambulatory, meaning they don't walk on their own. And they're bedridden. As CNAs, we would have to go around every 2 hours to change people anyway. So when you go around during that two-hour shift of changing, you would reposition them. So that means that you, if they're lying on one side, you turn them over to the other side and place, you know, maybe a wedge behind them so that they're not on the same spot. But if somebody has progressed to, you know, a stage three or stage four, you're using a lot more interventions. You're using a waffle mattress, maybe special kind of boots that you put on their heels.
That's right. Wedges. You can you get into different types of diet. You change the diet. You know, make sure
they've got enough protein. You're constantly, maybe even have a wound vac on there. You're constantly turning them.
Correct.
But by and large, they need to be turned at least every couple of hours.
So when you have a long-term care facility that has assessed this risk and followed up and assigned certain interventions to take place to reduce the risk or eliminate the risk of bed sores, and they fail to do that, or they fail to take an assessment, that is when the bed sore, according to CMS, Medicare, Medicaid services, would be avoidable. Okay, so now there are bed sores that are unavoidable where the long-term care facility does all those things, does the assessment or does a good assessment and takes and does appropriate interventions, and that it still happens, that is unavoidable, and generally there's no claim there. But for the most part, if a long-term care facility is doing all these things, it's going to avoid the bed sore.
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly possible that an individual could come in and they use what's called the Braden scale to determine their likelihood for or at what level they are for developing a bed sore. They do the proper risk assessment and they take the proper precautions, and still the person has a breakdown of the skin. There's many different contributing factors other than just pressure on the skin. There's also circulation. If the person has diabetes, if they have peripheral arterial disease, the heart problems.
That's right. And I think a good perspective to look at it is that, you know, as we learned in fourth grade health, the skin itself is an organ.
It's an organ, yeah.
So you can have organ failure. You can have skin failure. Yeah. But at the end of the day,
I would say, though, that 99% of stage 3 and 4 and unstageable bed sores are because of negligence.
I would agree anecdotally with the fact that if you've made it to that level, then the person that's taking care is not doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and it's typically it's the interventions and procedures to avoid the bed sore where you find the negligence.
That's
even
right.
If they've done a proper assessment, they still fail to properly execute that, because you got to think, the person doing the assessment, you know, puts it in a chart, and then they rely on the rest of the staff, which is oftentimes understaffed, to carry this plan out, and that just doesn't happen.
That's right. So the effects of a stage 3, stage 4, unstageable bed sore, pressure ulcer, decubitus ulcer can be catastrophic. So, as you can imagine, you have dying and decayed tissue, dying and decayed flesh, dying and decayed muscle, exposing the bone, tendons, the inside of the body to open air, which means that you're going to have a high risk of getting a bacterial infection of some sort. So that can oftentimes be the grave consequence of a bed sore, that is sepsis or other infections of the bone, the muscle, or the blood. When that gets in the system, it can shut your entire body down.
Yeah, it's fatal. I mean, septic shock is, at least anecdotally, ends up being the number one result of a stage 4 bed sore in our experience.
That's right. So now that we have a little bit of a better understanding of what a bed sore, what a pressure ulcer is, and what type of wound it is, and what it can do if it's not treated properly, one of the red flags, or one of the catalysts for bed sores, pressure ulcers, is moisture, which can, you know, lead to quicker breakdown for someone that is laying in bed or sitting in a wheelchair. And a new company, I don't know if it's new, this product is new, we're testing a synthetic silk sheet to determine if a new fabric would wick away the moisture and heat of hot flashes to allow women going through menopause to sleep better. And that was their intent. This is kind of like when how they discovered penicillin. So you have a company that was testing a certain type of sheet made of silk for older women to be able to sleep better. And they realized after clinical trials, after 11 clinical trials at several hospitals, it showed the use of this silk sheet, the synthetic silk sheet, reduced the incidences of pressure ulcers between 65% and 80%.
That's phenomenal.
Right. That's just amazing to me that, you know, you're trying to do one thing and you end up discovering a method or treatment for another thing. It's kind of like, what is that stuff that you get on your face? Botox.
So
Botox, as we all know, or at least Will knows, is you get Botox to reduce the effects of wrinkles on your face. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, what is it, Kenny Rogers, Joan Rivers.
Yeah, anybody that's a celebrity and older. Yeah.
Those two are definitely celebrities.
Yeah.
But they would get the Botox injections. But, you know, of course, you know, thousands of injections later, these doctors with their clients coming back and saying, hey, my wrinkles are gone, but also my migraine headaches are gone.
Yeah, discovered it works on migraines.
They discovered that Botox works to reduce the symptoms of migraine headaches. And so it's an incidental benefit for something that, you know, anyway, evidently this company was trying to find how to make, you know, our senior ladies sleep better. And they realized that they have come upon a preventative measure for bed sores. And I think that's fantastic. So it looks like here that the reason why the synthetic silk works better is because it looks like traditional cotton sheets, the short fibers of cotton break down with use and become abrasive. And so when they're abrasive and get wet with moisture, it gets sticky and creates torque and shear. So, I mean, that's the science behind why moisture can be deadly in terms of, you know, sitting there on those sheets. But that's an interesting thing. So, according to the company Precision Fabric, we set out 7 or 8 years ago to develop a product that would be incredibly kind to the skin and that would manage the moisture and friction and shear. And we learned after doing clinical trials that we have something special. So, let's see. It looks like FDA has not approved it yet. They are seeking a patent on it, and this is just the beginning, according to a spokesman for the company.
That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. What's also interesting is another device that was also originally used for something else, and that was a technology that was devised for the Mars rover has found its way into a medical device that can detect bed sores. Not just not prevent them, but it detects them several days, up to 4 days sooner, using technology that was designed by NASA. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so looks like here the new wireless device is able to detect the pressure sores up to 10 days before they appear on the skin surface, giving clinicians time to treat them before they become problematic. Traditionally, pressure ulcers have been identified through visual inspection by caregivers and treated using the protocols that we've mentioned in this podcast. But a lot of times we didn't mention that is the fact that once you're seeing something, once you're seeing it, you're sometimes can be too late. But it looks like here, this is an SEM scanner from California-based Bruin Biometrics. 47 patients took part in the trial, and in that trial, they found that on average, the scanner picked up a pressure sore 3.9 days sooner than visual inspections by nurses.
And what they say is that it detects the inflammation to begin with, because bed sores actually develop below the skin surface from the inside out. Once the inflammation starts, it's not visible to the human eye, but it can be measured and detected with these scanners days before the bed sore develops. So if you think about it, the pressure sore, you know, where the skin is pressing against the mattress creates, a restriction of blood flow to the specific part of the body, to the skin. And that starts an inflammation. And what happens is these scanners detect that inflammation, you know, up to 4 or 5 days before a bed sore even arrives. So there's a possibility that, you know, using this, using these sheets that they're making, and using all the other precautions, that we can, you know, dramatically reduce the incidence of bed sores. However, what you have to remember is that, you know, in the United States, there are two kinds of nursing homes. There are for-profit nursing homes and not-for-profit nursing homes. The for-profit nursing homes are owned by corporations, and like any other corporation that has a board of directors, that has, you know, investors, one of the most important things, if not the most important thing, is the bottom line. And studies have shown that, by and large, care is better in not-for-profit nursing homes. So whether these for-profit nursing homes are going to be spending all of that extra money on, you know, scanners developed by NASA and, you know, special sheets that prevent bed sores is yet to be seen. My guess is probably not.
Right. So in a lot of ways, with the progression of civil trials and tort law, what happens is that the more inexpensive a preventative item becomes, the more common it becomes in its use,
yeah,
the more likely it is to say to someone, you didn't have this scanner, you didn't have these synthetic silk sheets. That is an element of negligence on your part, because at this point now it's so ubiquitous, or the cost far outweighs, you know, the expense. Well, what am I trying to say?
Well, that's what it would be in the future. As it stands right now,
no.
You know, it's not even approved by the FDA. I would imagine that one of these SEM scanners probably costs somewhere in the range of six figures.
Yeah. So this, as of today, you know,
if not more,
they're not scrambling for it. But this would be an argument and a debate that we would be having, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years in the future. But I guess the bottom line is this, that if you're a scientist out there and you're working on something, you're probably going to find an answer to a problem that you had not thought of. Or you did not intend.
Absolutely. Interesting.
Yeah.
And so, actually, now we're going to another area of equipment that is used very often in nursing homes, and that is the lifts. And there are generally two types of lifts. There's the Hoyer lift, which is it's a machine that uses hydraulics or uses electricity, and what it does is you put a pad underneath the resident, and then you attach the pad to the hooks on the machine, and it lifts the resident up. And then there's also another machine that assists the resident standing up. For example, if you can imagine your head, the resident sitting down, and you put a strap behind them and attach it to the machine, and it helps them stand up on their own feet. So they're still on the ground with their feet, but the machine is helping pull them up. The Hoyer lift is completely pulling them up off the ground.
And so we talk about that because there is a case out of Springfield, Illinois, in October, November of 2016 here. A Springfield nursing home with a history of problems is facing a six-figure fine from the government and a lawsuit from the widow of a man who died after being thrown from a van's faulty wheelchair lift. After sustaining a broken neck when his wheelchair was catapulted from the lift at Lewis Memorial Christian Village on West Washington Street, Bob Folder was loaded onto a wheelchair without being examined for neck or spinal injuries and wheeled back into the nursing home, even as his wife implored the staff to call 911. Folder, who was age 77, died less than 3 weeks later. He died from respiratory failure caused by a broken neck. So here, again, we have a terrible story where you have an incident in which there's negligence that caused an injury, but then there was negligence after the injury in the sense that they knew that an individual was hurt, but they didn't do anything, and they didn't do anything in time. So this is a sad story, but
it is. Time and time again, this is what we see. Not only is there the potential initial negligence of him, you know, falling off this lift that was putting him in, this wheelchair lift that was putting him into the van, but then it's what they failed to do afterwards. In this case, when asked under what circumstances the staff would call 911, because they didn't, an investigator went to the staff and investigated this case and said, "Why didn't you call 911?" And when they asked, you know, the staff, "Well, what circumstances would you call 911?" And she goes, "Well, only if there's a true emergency."
Yeah, that's exactly what she said. "We call 911 if there is a true emergency," end quote.
This man was thrown from his wheelchair and the wheelchair lift onto the ground. Like, unless you have X-ray vision, you have no idea what has happened to this individual. Anytime a resident falls, anytime there's been impact, they need to go be checked out, because their bodies are not the same as, you know, some 21-year-old linebacker that's playing college football. This is an individual who has a weakened state, and in this case, he, you know, unfortunately broke his neck and it killed him.
Yeah, and so in terms of whether or not he should have fallen in the first place, sometimes that's a hotly contested issue. Sometimes you can't prevent every fall. But in this case, the Illinois Department of Public Health issued a $50,000 fine over the incident after investigators found that the lift had broken parts and had not been properly maintained. So the issue of whether or not he should have fallen off the lift or been thrown from the lift, I mean, that's open and shut in terms of from the eyes of the government, I can tell you that.
Yeah. And an interesting Georgia connection here. This man, prior to being in a nursing home, would make fishing lures for anglers. And one of his biggest customers was former President Jimmy Carter from Georgia.
So we have a another sad story. This would be my feeling more peculiar, although not terribly uncommon, of violence between nursing home residents. Here in Buffalo, New York, last year, police say that Ruth Murray, 83, accidentally walked into the room of another patient at Emerald South Nursing Home. A fight broke out between Murray and the other resident, who was male. Murray herself has Alzheimer's. The older man ended up killing Murray. So you have one resident with Alzheimer's walking into the room of another resident, and obviously who also lacks mental capacity, and it ended up in her death. So criminal charges were brought by the Erie County District Attorney, but after investigating, they are not going to accuse the crime. Yeah. He's not going to face charges because he doesn't have the mental capacity for criminal intent.
And just a quick criminal law background, you have to do the guilty act, which is the actus rea, and you also have to have the guilty mind, which is the mens rea. So in this case, you know, even though he committed a guilty act, clearly if he's got dementia or Alzheimer's, he doesn't have the requisite mens rea to be held guilty.
That's right. But and this is for the actual violation of a criminal statute. This is not to say that the nursing home would not be liable for...
That's a whole different matter.
Civil liability for this matter. So in this case, I'm not saying that, because we don't have enough facts here, but if the nursing home knew that they should have separated these two individuals, or there's some history of violence with one towards another, then that might open the facility to a lawsuit on behalf of the deceased in a negligence claim. So you have the difference between criminal and civil, which will probably end up being a topic for another podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so, it's an interesting, sad, but interesting situation. And unfortunately, it happens. It happens, you know, very frequently. You've got individuals that don't know where they are. They don't know.
They get confused.
They get frustrated. They get angry. And they lash out. And they lash out at the residents. They lash out at the nursing home staff. They lash out at other people's families. And it's just a sad situation. I mean, you know, the only thing that you can do is just be vigilant and situationally aware. And in a case like this, you know, if that nursing home wasn't vigilant and situationally aware, then they might be liable. Otherwise, you know, sometimes you just can't, humans are humans. You can't predict what they're going to do.
I would like to think of myself as situationally aware. And at this time, I am aware that we have come to the end of this particular episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. As always, you can either consume this podcast through Stitcher or iTunes in the audio portion. You can check us out there, subscribe to us, leave us a good review. Or you can watch this podcast. Watch us as we bring you the news and information. You can see us on our website at nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Or you can check us out on our YouTube channel. Until next time.
Until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.